Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we have a couple of great guests for you. First, I want to just give you a quote from George Eastman, who once said, "Light makes photography. Embrace light, admire it, love it, but above all, know light. Know it for all your worth, and you will know the key to photography." Well, my first guest is National Geographic renowned photographer Jim Richardson. I'll introduce him in just a moment. And then coming up in the second part of today's show, we are joined live in the studio by Jim Watson. He manages King County's Eco-Consumer Public Education Program. He's known as the Eco-Consumer in the Seattle Times. And he's going to come talk to us about some ideas for green holidays, some green gifts, how we can save a little money, how we can recycle, where to take stuff, all that good stuff. He's an expert on this, been doing it for a long time, and he'll be joining us later in the show. But first, as I said, we're talking with National Geographic photographer Jim Richardson. And he's a freelance photographer in his own right, has his own business, but he's been working with National Geographic for 30 years. So I don't have to tell you that he is an extraordinary photographer. They don't keep people around if they're not, and he's been with them for 30 years. So let me tell you a little bit more about the work that he's done. He's photographed more than 45 stories for National Geographic and Traveler magazines. His work has taken him around the world, literally from the tops of volcanic peaks to below the surface of swamps and wetlands. In fact, his work's taken him to Scotland, a hiking tour for National Geographic Adventures, the Ukraine, Mali, Ethiopia, Bali, India, Philippines, and someplace else he said he couldn't remember. That's just prior to this interview. He's among several other insanely talented photographers who are featured in a fabulous book called it's National Geographic Dawn to Dark Photographs, The Magic of Light. And it is really a super book. It's a coffee table book, just fantastic, great big full page and double page photographs. A little bit more about Jim. Since his first story appeared in National Geographic magazine in 1984, he's also been named a contributing editor for National Geographic Traveler. He's become one of the most productive contemporary photographers with more than 40 stories published. And he's actually traveled around the world five times. Just this year again, he photographed the Arctic and the Antarctic. He's also known for some beautiful work that he does as a documentary photographer of small town life. I mean, some of those images are just spectacular. And his mantra really is that he looks for the memorable and precious wherever he goes. CBS Sunday Morning has profiled his work twice, as did ABC's Nightline. And he's also widely known as a speaker and workshop teacher. He gives workshops all over the place. So Eric has this lined up for us now because of Jim's shooting schedule. I talked with him 2 or 3 weeks back, and we're going to bring that interview to you now for the very first time on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest, Jim Richardson. Jim Richardson, I want to welcome you to the show. You were first introduced to me as Jim Richardson, book spokesperson and forward writer. And then I was told, but think Indiana Jones meets photographer. Tell me what that feels like.
Well, I think I'm a little bit old. I wish I had as much hair as Indiana Jones, you know. I look more like his dad than I look like him.
Well, Sean Connery was his dad, so that can't be bad, right?
Well, I can do the Sean Connery talk if you want me to do that, yes.
There you go. So,
I've been working for National Geographic for 30 years, so I've gotten to get around a little bit and done a fair number of stories, and it's been a great experience.
Well, you've done some incredible stories. I mean, I read on your website you've been, over 30 years, you've been really passionate about just shooting everyday life. What is it about everyday life that gets you going?
It's richer than you ever imagine. And that's the thing. Specifically, that's probably about, I spent a lot of time photographing a small town out here in the Midwest, and it's only like 200 or 300 people, and you would think, you know, that almost nothing would happen, but in fact, you know, the whole panoply of human emotion and events goes on, and it's just incredibly rewarding. Yeah. Frankly.
Now, you did write the foreword to the book, and we're talking, of course, of National Geographic Dawn to Dark Photographs, The Magic of Light. And you said in the foreword, we're locked in a cosmic waltz with time, our planet, the sun. Years, days, and hours mark the passage of time, but we live in the moments. Tell us what that means to you.
Well, you know, we reflect on the world through our memories, I think, you know, the way we look at photographs. We see them as part of our life, but there's something that has happened already, you know. But we live in the moment, and when we get precious little time to sort of slow down and appreciate the moment, to sort of be in it and not let the world, you know, sort of abscond with the joys of just being there, you know. And this book gives us, I think, a great opportunity to reflect on those times of the day that go by too quickly, that we sort of notice as we drive to work but don't really get much chance to reflect upon, you know. This book is the kind of thing that just invites you to sit down and turn off the world for a little bit and reflect on the various moods of the day, the times, all the special things that happen, the way it changes as the light changes, and what a rich thing that is, you know. And then sort of when all of a sudden you come back to reality, you know, you come back with a bit more reflection in your outlook.
Yeah, definitely. It is a beautifully photographed book, as one would expect from National Geographic and the photographers it works with. Victor Hugo says, dawn and resurrection are synonymous. This is a quote in the book. And they talk about the blue hour before sunrise and dusk after sunset. Tell us about that blue hour and why that blue hour is so special.
You know, we have spent a lot of time in our lives as National Geographic photographers photographing the golden hour. You know, at that time when the light is just really warm and just makes everything glow and makes everything pretty, you know. When Paul Simon was singing about Kodachrome, that's the time he meant, you know. The
right.
Blue hour is before that and after that. And it's the time when that golden light goes away and the world becomes much more, I think, subjective. It becomes much moodier. It takes on its own beauty, but it's a very subtle beauty, and it's very often more difficult to capture. But it's the bookend. It's the bookend of that joyous glowing sunset. It's the reflection that comes in our lives after that.
Yeah. Well, there's a beautiful shot in, they're all beautiful shots, but there's a shot in there of fireflies that you took, and you called it a stab in the gloaming. Tell us about the gloaming and how long it took to capture that particular photograph.
Gloaming is a nice Scots word, I think. You know, it carries with it that meaning of the time of day when you can almost not see anymore, and yet it's all out there, you know. And that's the way it was that evening with the fireflies out there on the Flint Hills of Kansas, out on the prairie. It was so dark I couldn't see through the camera. I could only, you know, sort of take a shot and then evaluate the image on the back of the camera when it came through. And so it was a very experimental picture. It was pushing the edges, and fortunately the fireflies cooperated, whether they know it or not. the blue of the light cooperated. You know, the everything came together, and you know, the fireflies are those things that we're unfortunately seldom see in the urban areas anymore, but are just, you know, a magical part of our world, and I miss seeing them when a summer goes by and I don't really get that experience.
Right, and I think that's what makes this book so magical. It transports us literally all over the world. I mean, we've got photographs in there from Scotland and Devon and Myanmar. I mean, all over the world. How many photographers did you use to put this book together?
You know, I think it's over 100.
I started counting and I lost count.
And of course, you know, it's a wealth of talent from people who have spent their lives out there waiting for the moment, trying to be patient, trying to be dogged, you know, to be there at the right moment when the right thing happens, you know. And you know, a lot of those images, like I say, make me jealous. You know, I wish I'd taken them.
Yeah, I saw in there a photograph by Beverly Joubert, and both Derek and Beverly were guests on our show about a year or maybe 2 years back about the Big Cats Week. And they talked then about how many hours you have to sit there to capture, you know, just the right shot. When you're waiting for light, and this book is all about light and the importance of light in photography, what's been the most desperate measure you've taken to capture the right light?
Well, I don't know if I would be able to recall the most desperate. I've done a lot of desperate things. But I remember, for instance, I did a story in the Columbia River, not so far from you, and I knew that I absolutely had to have a great picture of the Columbia Gorge. And I went back to the same overlook, I think, 11 mornings.
Right.
Waiting for the right, on that 11th morning. I mean, the first day I got there, I did a not bad picture. But on the 11th morning, wonderful red glowing light came through the clouds, filled the gorge. You know, it was just incredible. You know, even if I hadn't been taking pictures, I still would have been hooping and hollering
right.
at my good fortune. There are a lot of those kind of things in which talent is all well and good, but doggedness gets you pictures.
Yes, I've known many photographers get up, you know, at very bizarre hours to capture something. And as you did, go back many days to capture it.
That's right.
So I read that you go ahead.
Hmm?
Go ahead.
No, it's just that you do whatever's necessary. If you have an idea of the story that you're doing, and we do when we go out for National Geographic, then you have both an expectation of quality and a desire to do something that just hasn't been done before. And you couple that with a faith that the world has wonderful things left to show you, and that's what is the combination of elements that makes you go back over and over again until something really special happens.
Right. So you've traveled all over the world, I think 5 times, I read, Jim.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite spot?
I would say I like Scotland a lot. I like the islands. The further I get out into those wild islands of the Hebrides, the happier I am, I suppose, as a photographer. But I've also, you know, photographed a little town here on the Great Plains for 35 years, and that has been probably the single most rewarding experience of my photographic life.
And why? How so?
Been very rich.
Right.
You know, they took me in when I was young and stupid and let me hang around and be part of their lives, and they showed me their lives. And when you see real life and can capture it, it's a very precious thing, you know. And to be educated by the folks of that small town that no matter where you are, there are wonderful things to be found is a great lesson.
Yeah.
It teaches you don't have to go halfway around the world, that there are great pictures in your backyard if you learn how to see them. And that probably has been the greatest lesson I've ever gotten from in my photographic life.
Yeah. I had my eyes opened when my brother was here for a couple of weeks because, you know, I'd be driving past somewhere and he'd suddenly shout, "Stop!" And so I'd pull over because I knew there was something he wanted to shoot. And it might have been a wall of graffiti or a kid sitting on the curb with bizarre makeup on or something. And so I started noticing a lot more, I found. You say in the book, Sunrise almost photographs itself. I don't believe this. We just mechanically put the camera to our eye, rest our finger on the shutter and wait for glory. Now, there's a little more to it than that. How do you know when you've got that magical photograph? And what kind of light are you looking for there?
Well, there is the element that sunrises are a bit too easy. You know, sunrises and sunsets. And so many of the pictures that people want to show you of sunrises and sunsets are wonderful in exactly the same way all the rest of them are, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the things what you asked there was, how do you know? Well, I think one of the things about sunrises and sunsets, about any situation which is loaded, is that you want to put on your humble hat. you want to be careful that when you see something through the viewfinder and you push the button and you take this picture, that you be a little watch out for pride and pay attention to how good the picture actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of have to draw back and say, yeah, all sunrises are good. You know, what are you going to do with this one to make it special? And anytime you think, boy, I just got a really great picture, a little red flag ought to go up. You know, saying, you might want to try again. you might want to push it a little bit further.
Right. As a photographer who's highly experienced and published in some of the best publications in the world, do you have self-doubt like many creative people do? Do you still experience that?
Experience what?
Self-doubt, or are you fairly comfortable with yourself now?
Oh, constantly. Why? Yeah. All the time, you know, this gnawing feeling that these pictures aren't any good, and that your life is over, and that kind of stuff. Yeah. and some of it has to be kept at bay, but some of it's good if it makes you feel that you really have to push hard.
Right.
And usually I can tell that if somebody comes to me and says, I went out this morning and I took a lot of great pictures, that if you look at them, you will say that they took a few mediocre pictures.
Right, right.
A little bit of self-doubt isn't such a bad thing. And if it makes you try harder, push harder, try variations after you think you've already got it, you know, all that kind of stuff, then it's a very good thing.
There we go. Well, this is a fantastic book. Love talking to you. What do you want listeners to know about this book? What do you want them to take away?
Well, first that they should open it up and find all my pictures, okay?
There we go.
But mostly it is that those special moments that you see in the book are also all around us. You know, that if you take the time to pay attention, you take the time to extract yourself from the hustle and bustle and focus on what is in our backyards, part of our everyday life, you know. If people get that out of the book, then I think that will be the real reward. Pictures should make us a little bit richer. And if these pictures can help people do that, then I think that'll be successful.
That's awesome. And I know you say that you have an intense geeky curiosity which keeps you going. What are you working on next?
I just got back from about 6 weeks of travel in six countries and on a story on the problems of feeding our planet.
Oh, very good.
I was photographing farmers all over the world.
Wow. Well, we look forward to seeing that. You'll have to let us know when that story's out.
It'll be in the magazine next year. Yeah,
okay.
Keep an eye out.
Okay, very good. Well, Jim Richardson, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. The book is absolutely fantastic, and I enjoyed talking with you. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you.
And again, Jim Richardson in the book, Dawn, Too Dark, Photographs, The Magic of Light, put out by National Geographic. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about this. And for those of you on camera, show you a couple of pictures. Not that you'll be able to see very much, but please stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And in the second half of the show, we're going to have Tom Watson with us. He just arrived in the studio.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Notice anything different? You should. There's no other station like Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Sunny day.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And we just heard from Jim Richardson, a National Geographic photographer for the past 30 years, about the latest book from National Geographic, Dawn, Too Dark, Photographs, The Magic of Light. And I wanted to just take a moment here just to tell you a little bit more about the book, because this is such a beautiful book. If you have somebody in your life who loves photography, or who just loves looking at photography, whether it's of people and nature, because there's a mix of both in here. And it's a beautiful coffee table book. For those of you who are watching on video, you can see here this, by the size of my hand, the size of the book, and it's actually quite thick. And it's just stunning. The photography in here is just beautiful. Do you think anybody will see if I hold it up, Eric, on camera?
Well, I'm looking now, and I'm seeing a little bit. So yeah, it's quite nice.
This is by Jim Richardson, the photographer we just heard from. And, I mean, this is just an introduction to it. It literally takes you from the beginning of the day to dark, and that's how the whole book is built up. And the thing I really like about it is that it has it has little quotes in here too, so you're not just looking at photographs. It's just a very, it's like taking a mini vacation when you look through here. I wanted to show this one because this is by Beverly Joubert, and Derek and Beverly Joubert live out in Africa, and they were guests on our show, I think last year or maybe the year before. They've been filming for, gosh, over 30 years as a married couple, and still married, but they work together. And the photography is just stunning. And the one that just took my breath away, well, there's a lion up here. You probably definitely can't see that one, actually. Probably definitely. That's good English. But this one here, can you see this, Eric? This owl?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is absolutely stunning. They just caught it as it's about to pounce on something. And it is just, the detail is absolutely stunning. So anyway, just wanted to take a moment to share that with you, because it's kind of hard on the radio to talk about how beautiful a book is, but it really is absolutely gorgeous. So if you're looking for gifts, that's a good one. And talking of gifts, we're going to have bring Tom Watson on in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break. He's the eco-consumer in the Seattle Times and for King County. And he's going to share some ideas for green holidays with us. So please stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Alas, my love, you do me wrong to cast me off discourteously, and I have loved you so.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Next week on Conversations Live, award-winning filmmaker Elizabeth Galen Baker and critically acclaimed Pacific Northwest author Christina McMorris share their work, experiences, challenges, and insights. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. and 98.9 HD Channel 3.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Find out about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
You're listening to the refreshingly different Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
A lover in captivity. Green sleeves was all my joy.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and I'm very pleased to have in the studio with me Tom Watson. Welcome.
Welcome to you. Welcome. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. I'm glad we connected. And let me tell you a little bit about Tom, and then he can tell you more in his own words. But he is King County's Eco-Consumer Public Education Program Manager and has written the Eco-Consumer column in the Seattle Times for the past 8 years. For the past 5 years, his Eco-Consumer segments have been regularly aired on Como 4 News. And he's just all about outreaching, all about green. And what else, Tom? Tell us. Welcome.
That really sums it up. Environmental outreach, trying to answer the public's questions. And this campaign is all about going green for the holidays, all the different ways we can reduce our environmental impact during this winter holiday season.
And the campaign, of course, is called Green Holidays, and there's a lot about it on your website. But we're going to talk about some of that today and then give some people some direction. If they want to go find more, they can go to the website and look up more information. So do you have a specific goal? Let's start with this. Do you have a specific goal when you set out with a campaign like this? I mean, what is your specific goal or goals?
Raise awareness would be number one. Get mm-hmm. people to think about the impact. And I really like to tie it into the big picture. Climate change, pollution, toxics in our everyday products. And those are things that people would like change, that it isn't necessarily working for us individually or globally, some of these environmental problems.
Right.
And the holiday season, with all the emphasis on shopping and consumption, and it seems like it has just turned into sort of a shopping holiday, that's a good time to look at it in terms of some of these other issues, but still have fun during the holidays. And it's also a way to show that it doesn't have to be some guilt-ridden thing,
or
beating ourselves up for this, but we can still have fun for the holidays by reducing our impact a little bit. That's what we're trying to do with this campaign.
Yeah, because, you know, we do want to have fun over the holidays, and especially if you've got kids or grandkids, you definitely want to have fun. But, you know, I can remember from when we were kids, we'd just have truckloads of truckloads of waste after we'd open all our gifts. So it is a big concern, and you've got some great tips on the website there for reducing some of that. So let's just take a look at, well, first of all, I'm really curious how you got this job. It sounds like a great job.
It is. I love it. And that's, I think that's the key to a great job, something you love doing. I bet that's true for you and your radio work.
Definitely.
I was a journalist, and then I worked for daily and weekly newspapers in different parts of the country. And I was interested in environmental stuff, and I did freelance writing about environmental issues, recycling and other things. And then eventually got this job with King County managing environmental programs. And I have been able to convince my bosses of the value of letting me do a lot of public outreach, which I think is really important to try to answer the questions.
Critical, I would say. Yeah, because there's no point in somebody sitting in an office doing this kind of thing. You've got to be out there reaching out to the public. And for those who don't know, tell us a little bit about your column with the Seattle Times, because you've been doing that, eight years?
Well, that one since 1995.
Oh, wow, long time, yeah.
Is that right? 2005.
Where are we?
I'm getting old, so I lose a whole decade sometime. So I've been doing it since 2005, about 8 years, and it runs every 2 weeks on Saturdays, and it's been in different sections of the paper. Now it's in the home and real estate section, and it deals with ways that we can reduce our impact, especially in our homes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. So one of the places I want to start is with food waste, because we have such an enormous, we waste so much food here, which, you know, I'm guilty of it too. And it's tragic when there are people in the world who just don't have enough food. So I'm trying to be very conscious myself.
That's great.
Of not buying so much stuff that, you know, it ends up going rotten before I can actually get to it. So it's what happens.
I'm really glad to hear you ask about that. And that's a separate campaign that King County has, and there's another project manager for that, but I've also tried to promote that. It's mm-hmm. called Food Too Good to Waste, and that's on our website. And so the Green Holidays website is KC for King County, kcgreenholidays.com, and then you can find these other websites and other information. But food waste, it really is such a critical issue when people are going hungry. Just the waste of resources. Overall, about 40% of the food in America is wasted.
Oh, my gosh.
That's wasted in our homes,
right,
at the grocery stores, on the farms, all through the food chain.
Yeah. And I pulled off your article of the Seattle Times here on food waste, because I remember, you know, a few years ago, I was taking environmental science classes at college, and she talked about, you know, food waste and you know, how it can cause issues, and we want to try and avoid it too. But it doesn't actually get recycled, you say. So it's just a shorthand way of describing. So what happens when we do recycle our food, when we put it out, you know, with our trash, as I'm trying to remember to do, what happens to it from there?
Well, that's a great thing that we can do in this part of the country. We can recycle our food scraps, and that's not reducing waste. There's some food scraps that we can't, like leftovers, if we eat those, then we don't waste those. But some things like banana peels and orange peelings and trimmings and bones, those have to go to waste. But here, we can put those in our yard waste cart. And most places, can you do that at your home?
Yeah, we can. We lived down in, Eric lives down there too. That's why I said we. But they just gave us last year little buckets that we can put our food waste in, and then we just tip it into the garden waste.
Yes.
Yeah, so then it just all gets composted.
And that goes to a large compost facility. Cedar Grove Composting is the great local company that has figured out a way to compost all that and turn that into a product that's such a high-quality product for lawns and gardens that they sell it at Lowe's and Home Depot. It's right there with the other kind of compost and manure products. And,
right, right.
And that's something that's not done too many other parts of the country, the San Francisco area and a few other places. But it's challenging to do that. And there's various issues with collecting it and processing it, but they can do that. So that's something that we talk about a lot in my office about the best ways to do that. We want to make it easy for the public.
Right.
What my wife and I do at our house, we use the compostable bags. And we have a kitchen top container. You can get nice stainless steel or ceramic containers. Line that with a 3-gallon compostable bag. You can get at many drugstores and grocery stores. And that makes it super easy to take it out and put it in that yard waste cart.
Oh, okay. That sounds a good idea. It is the messiness, I think, a lot of people. It puts people off from actually recycling it, I think.
I think so,
having
too.
Having it in the house.
But when you think about it, that mess before was in our garbage can. If all of that, those food scraps were going in the garbage can, and that was smelly and gross, and now you're taking it out of that, and so the garbage can, there's not much in there anymore. There's a few kind of plastic things and some old light bulbs, and then if you have a nice compost collection container sometimes with a filter on it, then you're actually making it less messy and reducing your odors if you learn how to do it in a way that's convenient for you.
Right, right. And that's a key point. So, okay, we got the food stuff out the way. So.
Can we tie in the food waste with the holidays? Because
yes, that's what I want to do.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Well, there are so many great opportunities to eat during the holidays, mm-hmm. obviously. And for parties and for meal planning, if we just try to think about, not serving too much, serving stuff that's going to get eaten, making sure the leftovers get put away right away so they don't go bad, distributing the leftovers among guests sometimes if you can't eat it all yourself. Do you have any tricks for that? I bet you've thought about that.
You know
at home.
What? I do. I fricassee a lot. You know, anytime you see fricassee, it basically is made from leftovers. So.
Okay, I've heard the word, but I have to say I don't know exactly what that is. So maybe for a
well,
people
I
who
you
are
know
clueless.
What? I haven't made it in a long time, but I used to make a turkey fricassee when I cooked for lots of people. I don't cook for too many people anymore. I usually go out, but when I used to cook for a lot, there was always you're afraid of running out, so we do buy too much. I mean, it's just we want our guests to have a good time.
Is fricassee like setting it on fire or what is?
No, you would take your leftovers, and obviously you're keeping them clean and hygienic and separate and everything. But you would take your leftovers and you might layer them in a casserole
Ooh.
Dish with vegetables.
Sounds great.
And the vegetables can be fresh or they can be leftovers too.
That's a fricassee?
Yeah. And then you make a sauce that goes over the top. You pop it in the oven and bake it all. And it just comes out of the oven bubbling
and
delicious and golden and brown.
Oh, man. Do you have some with you now? Because that sounds really good. It's about lunchtime. See, that is... You could be a spokesperson for our campaign because that's the kind of thing we're talking about is creative use of leftovers and casseroles and not that I know what a fricassee is and there are a lot of tricks like that rather than letting them go to waste. It's you have to be aware and don't let things get pushed to the back of the refrigerator where you forget about them for a couple weeks and then when you remember they're a different color and you have to.
That's right.
Throw them away.
And one of the things I've been doing lately is I've been juicing for the past few months.
That's another great tip.
Not every day, but most days. And you can actually take your vegetables that look less than wonderful and still juice them and still get benefits
really
from
them. Really good one. Juicing soups?
Yeah.
Casseroles?
Yep. Yeah. So that's all a good way of doing it. And especially if you're somebody who likes to buy fresh produce, and then you get called out of town for 2 days and your stuff's in the fridge.
Happens to us all the time, yeah.
So I find it a great way to use stuff. Yeah. I just get whatever is going to go and I just throw it into the juicer. And as you said, soups and casseroles, it's another great way of doing it.
And for the holidays, I think food gifts are great because that's a practical gift. That's not giving somebody stuff, some material item that is causing waste. But you want to know your gift recipient. Don't give them food that they don't like. Don't give them your homemade cookies if they're on a diet.
Right.
Don't give them fruitcake if they hate fruitcake. So knowing your recipient helps avoid waste.
Absolutely. It's a good point because I'm not a fan of sugar cookies. And if I get sugar cookies, I do give them to somebody else. I don't waste them. I don't like them, though. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to look at some ideas that you have in your campaign for gift giving, for gift wrapping. You've got some great suggestions up on the website. But for those who don't do web, let's you know, talk about that here.
I have some fun ideas up for those.
They're great. All right, can't wait to hear them. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Tom Watson, and he is the King County Eco-Consumer Environmental Public Education Manager. We will be right back. Please do stay with us.
Each shop window displays a Christmas scene for everybody young and old. Icicles on eavesdrops and tinsel on the tree, but it's a green Christmas for me.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals and paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 15th, it's a Kevin and Kim Sunday. Kevin McDonald and Kim Miller Medium and Animal Intuitive will host the show for me. In the first hour, they'll be talking with Dr. Bill Burlingame about immune support for our animal friends. Then they'll have open phone lines so Kim can help you connect with your animal or human loved ones on this side or the other. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live, award-winning filmmaker Elizabeth Galen Baker and critically acclaimed Pacific Northwest author Christina McMorris share their work, experiences, challenges, and insights. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk 1150 a.m. and 98.9 HD Channel 3.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has a new Facebook page, so you can see what's happening on our show and what we're up to between shows. Like us on Facebook and look out for upcoming contest drawings.
Lewis and Clark would be proud. We're exploring new territory on the air every day right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Red bows on the railing, snowflakes on the ground, but it's a green Christmas in this town.
And we're live in Seattle. So that's our town. And we're talking green holidays with the expert in town, Tom Watson. He's King County's Eco-Consumer Public Education Program Manager and the Eco-Consumer Columnist with the Seattle Times. And I'm not sure Eric believed me about fricassee, so he looked it up on the web while I was talking.
I did believe you, but I was actually so enlightened by it that I thought, let's look up some recipes real quick.
Okay.
And the tough part for looking it up on the web was just that I had no idea how to spell fricassee. So if anybody else wants to look up fricassee recipes, they can. It's F-R-I-C-A-S-S-E-E.
Yeah, I believe it's French fricassee, so that's why it's a weird spelling.
Yeah, chicken fricassee sounds particularly nice.
Yeah, you can do it with everything. And another, that just popped into my mind, my sister would make a Coleman's supper, as in coal, you know, C-O-A-L, like the coal miners.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
She'd make a Coleman's supper, which is just delicious. And
is that anything like a plowman's lunch?
No, totally different.
Okay.
It's leftovers, though.
We can talk about that later.
But it's when you don't have any money,
it's leftovers because, you know, in the old coal mining days, they always had like 12 kids. And so you just take whatever vegetables you've got, whether it's cabbage or sprouts or carrots, whatever, layer them in the bottom of a dish. And then usually you have leftover potatoes. And if there's meat, that's all well and good. But usually in a coal miner supper, there's no meat. And then you just make a basic cheese sauce and pour it over the top and put it in the oven. It's delish. And nobody knows it's leftovers. I've served it many times.
We have to stop talking about this food because I'm getting too hungry.
I know. And we've got lots of stuff to talk about here. So let's talk about some ideas for holiday giving. You know, there's a number of reasons to go green. First of all, we've talked about, you know, how it affects the environment. But also, you know, there's a lot of people right now who don't have a lot of spare cash to throw around. And they still want to present people with something that's nice. And so let's talk about some of the ideas you have there. And I know one of the ideas you have, you call it the experience gift.
Give an experience instead of stuff. That used to be our whole campaign. We had our campaign that I also managed that for a few years was called Waste Free Holidays. And that campaign entirely promoted experience gifts. And we listed local organizations and businesses that offered experience gifts and gave a discount of at least 20%, I think it was, if you bought an experience gift as a gift. And we aren't doing it that way anymore. We've expanded our campaign into green holidays, but we still promote that concept. But that so an experience gift could be tickets to a show. Let's say you give your mom tickets to a Broadway play that's touring Seattle, and you go with her or something like that.
Right.
Or a gift certificate to a restaurant for your starving college student kid, a membership to a museum.
Right.
There's so many different cool ideas, and a lot of businesses actually promote that and still offer discounts on experience gifts as experiences as gifts this time of year.
Right. And of course, with some of these websites around, I don't really want to plug anyone in particular, but you know, Groupon springs to mind. There's a lot of those kind of group, those sites around. They do offer discounts if you buy multiple tickets. You know, I remember going whale watching with a Groupon experience. You know, I took my nephew. He'd always wanted to go snowboarding, lives right in the middle of England, nowhere near any snow. But I found a school about 50 miles away that has a fake snow. It was fabulous. We went fake. It was real snow, but it was indoors. They created
wow.
it indoors. And so I took him for a snowboarding lesson there for an experience. And it was one of the highlights of his life. So
that's a tremendous experience, Kate.
Yeah, I think that experience stuff is really important. And also you get to spend what is, I think, probably the best gift of all. You get to spend time with people.
Yes.
So let's look at some of the gift ideas you have as far as green gifts.
Well, experience gifts, and then I'm also a big fan of practical gifts.
Yeah.
Something that people would have had to buy anyway, and it's not something that's just going to go to waste and kind of wasting resources. Things like socks, clothing, you want to make sure it's something that they actually want. I think for any kind of green gift, though, it's important to make sure it works for the recipient. You don't want to force green on somebody who doesn't want it, but by knowing the person you're giving to, you can do that. Don't give a green gift to someone who doesn't want it because then that will get wasted.
Right, right.
So you want to pay attention to what they're interested in. I mean, something like an example I gave in my newspaper column was a vacuum cleaner. I mean, some people would not want to get a vacuum cleaner from their spouse. They might be insulted by that.
I was just going to say, you know, guys, if that's you think, oh, that's a great idea, check with your wife first
yes.
if she'd really like it. Otherwise, you might get hit over the head with it.
That's what I said. Ask first. But a vacuum cleaner can be a green gift. Some of them have these filters, and they're really good to improve your indoor air quality by
right.
being real good dust busting types. But so it may be a green gift, but it might not be a suitable green gift for your person.
Right. Tell me, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Tom.
What
has been your favorite gift, green gift, that you've received?
Well, I might have to think about that a little bit.
Or one that you've given.
Well, one that I've given is a little easier, and I have tried to do that. I've over the years, I've given several times, I've given my wife a gift certificate for a massage,
mm-hmm.
and she's really liked that. And then last year, and this is another way to go green. So our extended family, my wife's family, we used to give, everyone would give each other gifts. But then when the economy got tight a while back, we started just drawing names. So you give a gift to one person.
Right,
a bigger gift. A lot of families do that. And so last year, I had my brother-in-law, Jeff, And he is a big country music fan, so I gave him tickets to a big country music show, the Kenny Chesney concert that was the following June. It was last June. And he went with his wife, and they had a great time.
Right.
That really made me feel good. They really seemed to enjoy it, and so that's one of the ones that I enjoyed giving the most.
Right, right. Now, if you don't have much cash, you know, or you have a lot of people that you do, you know, have to buy for, some families do, as you do, recommend it and just choose a name, and others, you know, feel obligated to buy for every person.
I don't think mine is as good as yours. I think the snowboarding with no snow anywhere around with your nephew. I like that one.
Yeah, I froze my butt off there for 3 hours while he was. It was a great. You were in this big building and you were in snow. It was just amazing.
There's creative ideas. I saw an ad in the paper today for a balloon trip and for hang gliding. You can, for someone who's into this adventure stuff, what's the thing where you go through the trees?
Zip wiring. Done that. I did that in the Sierra Madres. My favorite gift from my uncle years ago was he gave me a glider lesson in a glider plane. I went up in a glider plane over the mountains in San Diego. And they took the roof off, and it was just a phenomenal experience.
They're offering those in this area, those gliding ones. I saw an ad for that.
Yeah. So, but, you know, not everybody's got that kind of cash to spend out. So let's talk about something that I used to do a lot as a writer when I was working a lot with corporations, and that's we'd take old content and we'd repurpose it. So let's talk about how we can repurpose gifts, how we can spruce them up, you know, how we can go around old stores and find little gems.
I'd say that's my favorite one, is making gifts, making them, repurposing them, as you say, from items you've gotten at a thrift store or that you have at home. And this is the golden age for that kind of reuse because of all the resources on the internet. You can almost anything, you can type in something like reusing old corks or a search term for something that you have, and you can find videos on it and instruction on all different things. And I talk about this actually in my column that's going to be in this coming Saturday, making decorations and gifts. And so one of my favorite sayings is use what you got.
Right.
So you think about your material. Some people, maybe they're big wine drinkers, and so they have a bucket of wine corks. They save all their wine corks. There's a lot of cool crafts for corks. Maybe you have scrap wood. Maybe you have a big holly tree with beautiful berries and you can make decorations for people. Maybe you have a garden and have herbs that you grow. So what do you have? What are some that you've done?
I was just thinking, it just came to mind, one of my favorite possessions, and I've had this about 25 years. Well, no, longer than that. I've had it over 30 years because But anyway, my niece made me this little sachet at school.
Those are good.
And she filled it with lavender. And you can do all kinds of things. You can make, I was looking on your website, because I remember spending $50 on this thing for my mom's neck. She has, she used to have rheumatic arthritis in her shoulders. And so I bought her paid $50 for this neck warmer. And you have an example on your website where you can actually go make one of those and fill it with rice.
Yes. And then it heats up in the microwave.
Yeah.
You heat it in the microwave.
Yeah. And there are a lot of other things on your website, like making personalized glasses case for your glasses.
That's a fun one that we've been talking about. You can take a couple of toilet paper rolls or a paper towel roll, and then just a nice fabric scrap, and really easily make a eyeglasses case.
Yeah. And last year, I have a friend who grew a sustainable garden, and she pickled onions and gave me a jar of pickled onions, and that was one of my favorite gifts last year.
She knew what you liked, right? And so she did that. That's perfect. Things like that, though. One thing about making gifts, a lot of times you need to start planning early. You don't want to all of a sudden get to December 15th.
Stressed. Yeah.
So if you're doing gardening, you want to start thinking about it almost the year before, the spring before, what you're going to plant and make notes to can them or whatever. And for crafts gifts, if you can start a little earlier,
right?
Maybe some of the simple things you could still start now, but it's it's going to get where people are pretty stressed.
Right,
fairly
right,
soon.
Yeah. I also received my birthday, which was just last month, a knitted cowl, like a scarf. It's just a big circle like this, but it's knitted and you can wrap it around your neck different ways. Somebody knitted that with her arms. Not with needles, with her arms. There's great big holes in it. They're supposed to be. And I was like, wow, it's a really unique gift. I have not seen anything like it. And I will definitely get some good use out of it.
That's wonderful. See, you ought to be doing my job, Vicky. I hope that me and hire you because you have better ideas than I do.
Grow up with grandparents who went through two world wars. You learn a lot from them, I'm telling you.
Well, I learned from my parents.
Waste not, want not was their mantra. So we're right at the end of our show. Oh, I didn't see Eric waving me. We're right at the end. Just quickly give out your website, if you would, so listeners can find out more.
KCGreenHolidays.com.
All right. And Tom Watson, my guest, please check out conversationslive.net if you need more information. We'll be back next week. See you then. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.